Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Aeolian Impromptu. I'm your host, Maya Barsak. Today my guest
is contemporary classical music composer Nico Muhly. Nico Muhly is a composer and arranger and has recorded with both classical and pop musicians. As a very prolific composer, he has composed for many notable symphony orchestras and chamber ensembles, and also has had two opera commissions by the Metropolitan Opera in New York. Starting off with Move, performed by Timo Andrés on a new Nonesuch release in 2020 entitled I Still Play. We just heard Move, performed by Timo Andrés on a recent 2020 release by Nonesuch. We're going to move now to a chat I had with Nico in his studio in New York.
Hello, Nico.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing these days?
Better than I was. This feels like a sort of transition moment. Things feel like they're opening up a bit. I've been back to the opera. I went to the ballet. I've gone to some concerts. I don't even want to curse it by saying normal, but it's feeling a little bit better.
Have you been hibernating during the COVID time, or have you been actively creating, working, brainstorming, and so forth?
It's a combination. I mean, the very beginning of it, of course, I was hibernating isn't even the word. I was just, you know, despairing and looking at the wall. A few COVID-specific projects came up, most notably, like, in August of 2020, the San Francisco Symphony commissioned me to make this kind of video thing that was a sort of micro concerti for a bunch of collaborators and little groups of the orchestra in this one kind of 17-minute piece called Throughline. That was a huge lifesaver at that time because, you know, we just didn't know what was happening.
And so when you did that, did you feel like you were the contemporary classical musician, or were you drawing with all your constellations of musical realities?
In that particular case, it felt a little bit more like doing a film score because I was composing it in all these little chunks, and then we were recording it in all these very remotely. So for instance, the guitarist Bryce Dessner was in France, and so they sent a video crew there to capture him, and then Esperanza Spalding was in Oregon, and I was in San Francisco. And so it felt much more like the sort of remote recording attendant to a film score.
And so did that kind of like propel you, or, you know, was like a trampoline jump to a new phase in your compositional process, or it was just kind of like, okay, I'm kind of back in the saddle?
Well, I think about it in two different ways. I mean, I think composing like that as a choice versus composing like that as necessity, there was overlap, but then there were differences. I mean, there are things that I would have done differently if I were making it, were there not all these restrictions. However, I think given the restrictions we had, I think we did really well. I mean, it was, and it's not just me. I mean, it was me composing, but it was, you know, all the collaborators, but then also the organization of the symphony itself had to, you know, put this thing together is technically really crazy and logistically really crazy. Right. So that to me felt like a few moments where concert music started to feel like an opera, right? Like when you write an opera and you go backstage, there are millions of people. I mean, it feels like there's this army of people, all of whom are treating the score as a kind of master tech. And so this project, way more so than other symphonic pieces or even any kind of concert music, felt more like an opera or like a film.
How have you gotten back slowly into your world and being creative?
I'm not quite sure how to put this. I mean, it was not easy for anybody, number one.
Right.
Number two, I don't know that we're really back so much. I don't know if there's any version of really returning to what it was like. And I don't know if there's any version where everyone will do as well as they had been doing. And so that to me is actually the big distinction. It's like, okay, fine, like I could get a commission, but that doesn't necessarily mean that all the people I used to work with are getting concerts or commissions or whatever. And so it feels like to say that anything is back is kind of a misnomer.
I'm sorry, I meant more like in your compositional process, your creative process, do you feel like you've changed so much that the way you think about writing, the way you go about writing has influenced you?
So I've learned a couple things. I mean, that's a good question. And I think one of the things that I've learned is that I used to compose in so many different places, and travel was such a key part of how I structured my life, basically. So you'd say, you know, okay, I'm going away in a month, so I have to get this far in this piece before I leave. And then, so that's a kind of macro structure, right? And then you have these micro structures where it's like, I'm going to the opera at 6:45, so I have to leave the studio at 6, which means that I have to start backing up the computer at 5:45, you know. And then this superimposed grid, it turns out that when all those things went away, that it was actually very difficult to self-motivate without the strictures of these, you know, hard deadlines. It's like you're either getting on the plane or you're not. And one of the things that I found really frustrating is, you know, a lot of people were like, well, now's the time, like that string quartet you've always wanted to write, you know. And I think no, now's not the time for that string quartet I've always wanted to write. So to answer your question properly, you know, I was not nearly as productive as I used to be because there wasn't structure on which I could hang my writing time. And then the other thing, and I think this is really important, I hope I'm not evading your question, but one of the things that was a huge part of my life, not just travel, but it was these serendipitous moments during travel where you sort of run into someone that you're not even working with that time, but it's like you run into a conductor you've worked with 8 years ago in Germany somewhere, and you have like a quick glass of wine before their dress rehearsal. Moments that remind you that in as much as the act of composition is a very lonely one where you sit in a room alone, you're actually part of this community of people and part of a community of people who work together, love one another, travel together, don't travel together, intersect in really specific ways. And so without that, I did feel really empty for a very long time, for kind of a year.
I was going to say, because you talk about travel and it seems that in every piece, and they're all so very different, you kind of invite your listeners to travel with you.
That feels like a generous interpretation. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And so is there at this moment a particular compositional language, quote unquote, or sonic reality that really prevails in you right now?
Something I've liked exploring during COVID is remote recording. So even though I actually work in a recording studio, for a lot of these projects, it was people in their houses, you know, playing the oboe or playing the flute or whatever, and then sending me the files. And I think I've gotten a little bit more comfortable with that as a function of composition. So you can just say, all right, well, you know, for this session, we can record the viola in her house and it'll balance in a different way because it's not happening in the context of a string orchestra. So that's been sort of rewarding. The other thing I'd say, I'm writing pieces right now that were commissioned a long time ago and pre-pandemic in a lot of ways. And so you can't really radically change your style once you have half the piece written. And to a certain extent, with the way that I work is that I map the whole thing out and I know kind of how it sounds and I know what the size of the vessel is and I know what it looks like in a sonic way. I'm not sure how I'll describe it. And then you owe yourself, or I owe myself, the rigor of kind of realizing that process. I mean, and that was really difficult.
And so what are some of the things that you're working on and you'd like to share with us?
So I'm doing a whole bunch of different things. I'm writing another pocket viola concerto for my friend Nadia Sirota, which is going to happen in Tokyo in a year. So I'm super excited about that. I'm writing a set of 14 piano etudes for my friend Connor Hanek, and I haven't written solo piano music in a really long time. And he's someone I've always wanted to write for since we were at Juilliard together. So those are really exciting. I'm writing a 40-minute long piece for solo harp based on the Stations of the Cross, which is a whole other conversation. And that's sort of what's on the desk right now.
So do you work on these pieces simultaneously, or you do one at a time?
It's simultaneous. In general, I try to have different things at different stages. So for instance, if I'm mapping one thing out, that's one process. And then literally adding, like figuring out what the notes are, that's a second process. And if I'm editing the parts or something, you know, like going through making sure the slurs make sense or the timpani stickings or something, that's a different process. So I can juggle those things.
Can you tell us what you use? What tool? Is it pen and paper or MIDI or
sure.
computer?
I start with paper, a blank piece of paper, just a piece of, you know, A4 paper. And I map out what I think the piece is going to do. So what happens in the piece, just the most basic, like zoomed out Google map of the itinerary of the piece. From there, I'll have ideas about, okay, this piece, I've been thinking about archaeology, and let me like print out all these images and let me put that in the folder and let me think about this. Or, you know, the person who commissioned this is obsessed with, you know, French Baroque music. Let me print out a bunch of that and put it in the folder. So there's always a scheme. In the case of concert music, what I'll do is I'll start on paper drawing shapes, and I'll start on paper drawing little ideas, and that happens away from the keyboard. So that happens just in space. And then once I have that, then I map the whole thing out in Sibelius. From there, a couple different things can happen. Either I will transfer my notes verbatim into Sibelius and then edit, or I will transfer them into Pro Tools and then play with it as audio, or I will start again. That's one form. And then basically, once I have a big architecture in Sibelius, then I ditch the paper. I work primarily in the computer.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you for your insightful and slightly provocative questions. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
We're going to segue now and listen to a couple of pieces written by Nico Muley. Let All the World Sing for Choir, performed by the Choir of Clare College, Cambridge, under the direction of Peter Harrison, followed by One Line, Two Shapes for orchestra with the WDR Symphonie Orchestra, conducted by Christian Masselaru. just heard One Line, Two Shapes, performed by the WDR Symphony Orchestra under the direction of Christian Marcellaro. Preceding that, we heard Let All the World Sing for Choir, performed by the Choir of Clare College, Cambridge, under the direction of Peter Harrison.
Thanks again for tuning in. I'll be back with another interview soon. Till then, be well.